James.
What a nice introduction. Thank you. Hi, everybody. My name is Stevie B, and I'm an alcoholic. And a member of the West Side Men's Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Nice. It's good to be here with you guys tonight. And I want to thank Nikki and Big John. I have this whole book bag that I travel with my big book, because my eyes are not as that like they used to, so the print is real big. And then I have my big 12 and 12. And neither of them are in my book bag tonight. So I asked Nikki to grab me a big book, and she brings me this big book, and the big book has the big book in big print, and then it has the 12 and 12 in it also. This is fantastic. What a beautiful gift. Thank you so much, guys. This is great. It's fantastic. I will take it everywhere. So last week we spoke about step 3, 4, 5, 6, and we alluded to 7. We covered a lot of ground last week. Tonight we're going to attempt to talk about step 7 and the importance of step 7, 8, 9, and 10. And I say it like that, not like it's not important. These are huge steps. These are steps that will change your life, will definitely change your sobriety, and it's definitely changed my life. And then the week after that, we'll backtrack a little bit to step 10. We'll talk about 10 and 11. And then the last week, I have 3 more weeks, I think. And then we'll talk about step 12. So let me start off by saying, before I speak, every single time I speak, I get a couple guys, we go into the parking lot, and we say a prayer. And the prayer goes like, Lord, help me to get out of the way. Help me to diminish as you increase. And then we do the third step prayer. And the third step prayer sets the tone for the evening. If I'm in the way of the third step prayer already, that's a problem. If I'm stumbling on the third step prayer, I've already gotten involved. And then I usually need to take a couple more minutes and just get myself centered. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self so that I might better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. If you can memorize that simple prayer, no matter how frazzled you're feeling or what you have going on, in terms of the butterflies in your stomach, no matter what interview you might be at, no matter what's going on in your job, if you can say that prayer, if you can align yourself with God's will, you'll have an ease and a comfort that comes over you. Now, sometimes you'll be so frazzled that you won't be able to say that prayer. And as one of the brothers handed out last week, we have this prayer that is, it's the mini third step prayer. And it goes like this: God, please remove this bad thought from me. I'm so glad you're with me today. God, please remove this bad thought from me. I'm so glad you're with me today. Now, what does that do? It opens up a channel between you and God. My sponsor pointed out to me that he taught me that you can't have a good thought and a bad thought at the same time. You can't have an evil thought and a pure thought at the same time. So my job, because my mind is always racing, it's always going in many different directions. There's always committees and subcommittees and different personalities going on and different things going on, and I'm an observer. And an observer is a person that pays attention to other people when he should be paying attention to what's in front of him. So an observer is sometimes a gift, and it's a lot of times it's a defect of character. So I'm an observer. And when I should be focused on over here, I'm over here, I'm over here, I'm over here. So my sponsor pointed out to me, God, please remove these thoughts from me. I'm so glad you're with me. And what that does is help get me centered. I shared all that with you the last couple weeks. I shared with you because there's a lot of new people here tonight again, and I appreciate that. That's so nice. I'd like to see some of those people from last week come back, but I don't think that's going to happen. But so this is a nice new crowd, and I want to tell you that I had 7 years of sobriety. I came into the program when I was 25 years old. I stayed sober till I was 31. I married this beautiful woman right here, Sandra, and she married me. That's why I stumbled. She married me. I pursued her for a year. She finally gave in. And we had this beautiful AA wedding, And people flew in from all over the country. We had, ice sculptures and two different guitarists, and just was a grand affair. My parents are sitting right next to her. It was, one of the most amazing times of my life, which your wedding is supposed to be one of the most amazing times of your life. It was just great. But I already had, at that wedding, I had some of my alcoholism creeping in, which we will always have. Just like you always have getting older creeping in. I don't know, for some of you people that are all getting older, you know what I'm talking about. Getting older is always creeping in. When you're younger, you think, oh, I'm always going to be younger, and that's great. And you guys look amazing, and you should feel like it always is going to happen. But what's going to happen is you're going to turn out, you're going to be like 45, like my age, and you go, wow, when did that all happen? When did it? And then you're going to see that these things creep in. So alcoholism was creeping in. And you will have to combat alcoholism by an active program. An active program means actively working the 12 steps. It means actively sponsoring guys, actively being in service, actively being in a home group, actively serving God. That's an active program. Otherwise, it'll creep in, and before you know it, you'll be having thoughts of, wow, wouldn't it be nice to take a drink? Not that getting drunk. I don't think the enemy comes at us like, wouldn't it be nice to get drunk? I don't think that's most of us in here, the enemy doesn't say that, hey, let's get loaded. Let's lose our car. Let's wake up with our pants down on our ankles and on the side of the street and with a tattoo on our back that says party on. We don't think that. We don't think that that's going to happen. We think we're just going to have like a martini. We're going to have one martini. We're going to have one glass of wine. I was a one glass of wine guy. In my mind, I always thought I could have one glass of wine. I never drank wine. I never had one glass of wine. I never drank wine. But for the 7 years that I was in sobriety, I always thought to myself, you know what, I could have a glass of wine. And then some of you guys heard my story. I decided from all the places in the United States that we would go on our honeymoon, that we would go on our honeymoon in New Orleans. And my wife, not being from this country and not really knowing what New Orleans had, and New Orleans is a romantic place. Don't get me wrong. It is wonderful. It's beautiful. It's romantic, and it is a great place for a honeymoon. I'm not sure that I would, in hindsight, that I would pick New Orleans as the only place that we could go to on our honeymoon. Actually, we went to two places. We went to a casino, and we went to New Orleans. Now, right then and there, my dad's, years in GA, he's years in Gamblers Anonymous. Right there, you would think that maybe something was askew in my thinking, but no, I barreled right along, and that's where we went. And on our honeymoon, I saw people drinking fine wine, and in my mind, I saw myself as a guy that could drink fine wine. God bless you. I also saw myself as a guy that could drink fine cognacs. Now, I don't know why that's so funny to you. I am a guy that I think I could drink fine cognacs. Now, I want to explain to you, after I started drinking in my seventh year, I never got to meet a fine cognac ever. I was in search for fine cognacs. I went right from wanting to have a fine cognac to right to pop off vodka that was made yesterday from a potato. That's where I went. So I missed the whole fine wine, fine cognac experiment, and I crashed and burned, and it was miserable. Now, that didn't happen overnight. For 6 months, I was able to drink somewhat. I wouldn't say socially. I was never a social drinker. I was hiding from the very beginning because my wife said to me that I couldn't drink in the house except on Saturdays. And if you can't only drink on the house until Saturday and you have alcoholism in you, that's a problem. You understand? That's a problem. Because if you start, let's just say you have a drink on Monday, and then she says, oh no, this is not Saturday, then you have to hide like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday to come out of the closet like on Saturday. And then you got to run back in the closet because she said you can only have one drink. So you're in the closet the entire week. You come out of the closet for one drink on Saturday. And then you got to run back into the closet and become a handyman that works in the garage a lot building shelves that you never comes out of the garage. So I have this whole entire shelf system that I was going to install into our home in the garage that has never seen the light of day. But first of all, I'm not handy. This thing never could have been a shelf. But I was back there with tools and sanding equipment and shellac. And someday, if James or one of these guys that knows what they're doing comes over the house, we're going to take that block of wood and we're going to make it a shelf. But let me tell you, it wasn't for lack of trying. I was in there for 3-4 months trying to build a shelf. So all that brings me to this. Eventually, for a guy like me, you realize that drinking is going to be detected. There's other things that are detected less quickly than drinking. And of course, there's stuff that's other than alcohol that's readily, easily. You can get it easy. That's what I'm saying. And so I started popping those and then only drinking on one drink on a Saturday and, of course, hiding the entire thing in the experiment. In my 6 month of drinking, got really, really bad. And I want to say that it got so bad that, well, let me just say that it got so bad that I thought that the substances that I was taking was actually helping me with my mental condition. I started to have a mental breakdown because I was taking substances that would keep me up all night long, and I didn't have to sleep. And I didn't have to eat. And I thought, this is amazing. This is fantastic because I'd never seen anything like this. Remember, I was sober for 7 years. When I used to go out and partake in stuff, I never partook in any of this stuff. This is some new age stuff, some new young people stuff. And I was able to stay up all night long and not eat and not go to sleep. And I thought to myself, this is the fountain of youth. I mean, it really is. You don't have to eat. You look amazing. People tell you know, it's amazing about losing weight. You could go from 270, or I was like 230, I dropped down to 160. My eyes were bulging out of my head. I had dark circles for not sleeping, and people at work, and my jeans are falling down, I have that pants to the floor thing, and people at work are like, wow, you look amazing. You know, I look like a patient from Uganda, and they're like, you look amazing. So I'm like, wow, I look amazing. And I'm getting these ideas in my head on how to like create new businesses and how to make all the, and I think I'm a genius and I'm writing stuff down at night and I think I found the fountain of youth and the fountain of losing weight and you don't have to sleep anymore. I just thought I was incredible. And needless to say, my wife thought other things. She didn't think I was so incredible. And she started to think I was having a nervous breakdown, and then I obviously started to have a nervous breakdown. But I thought the substances I was taking was actually helping me. And I started to have crying fits for days on end and suicidal thoughts. And, you know, it's amazing that the thing that we think is our best friend turns out to be our enemy. But not just our enemy. I mean, the thing that wants to destroy us from the inside out. A person text messaged me last week and he had relapsed again. And I know how that feels. My parents are witness to tell you that they know I know how it feels. I slept one night in their house in a bed that they let me stay in for one night before they put me in treatment, and they know that I know how it feels. And he text messaged me that he wants to die, and I text messaged him back. There's far worse things than death. There's far worse things than death. What is one of the worst things worse than death is living an alcoholic, drug addict existence. Wanting to die and not being able to die. Having that rapacious creditor come and steal our joy that God gave us in recovery, steal it from us, take it and hold it in front of us and laugh in our face. That's worse than death. And that's what I was living. And then I got into a treatment center by the help of my family and their strength of being able to kick me out of the house and put me in treatment. And I'll tell you one cute story, and it'll make you laugh. My wife is from Colombia. And for those of you that you don't know, the Colombians are tough. You know what I mean? It's a tough country, and she's tough. She's sweet, and she's tough. You know, she's like a candy apple. She's tough on the outside and sweet on the inside. But she can be tough, and you get whacked with a candy apple, and it hurts. So, and then her sister was visiting here from Colombia, and she's actually tougher than my wife. They're both of them together are pretty tough, but the sister's even tougher. And in one of my what you would call drinking runs, I came into the house and I knew that they were staying there. And I said to my wife, I said to them, I want my money, and I want you guys out of here. This is my house. You know, you've seen that on TV, cops, how people think they get all strong. You might even have done it yourself. You might have thought you were all strong. So I go into my house, I'm like, this is my house. And, you know, forgetting that my wife is like really tough and her sister's even tougher. And they disrobed me. I mean, not down to my... But they took my jewelry. They took anything that I could sell. They took my wallet. They took my shoes. And they kicked me out of my own house. And that, you know, that's how good it got for me. I mean, it was never a party. I missed the whole scene. And while I was in treatment, I got sweetly reasonable. I got into a halfway house. I met Masons that here tonight, some of my friends. And that's how I came back into the program. I was 34 years old. I was broken inside. I just had 7 years. People in the community respected me. And now I had no time, no self-esteem, no money, no car, no job. And I just didn't know how I was going to claw my way back. And I had some incredible men in my life that told me things like, you have to get a meeting schedule. And I said to Dick B, I said, well, I go to meetings. And he said, no, that's not what I said. I said a meeting schedule. And I know that Joe Bear has a meeting schedule. I have a meeting schedule, which means you know where you can be able to find me on a Monday night, on a Wednesday night, on a Thursday night, and a Saturday morning. That I just told you my meeting schedule right there. Those are for sure you know where you can find me. Now, on Tuesday nights, I keep open for speaking. On Tuesday mornings, I have the blessing of going with my dad. Right now, we go to a meeting called Victory, which is as raw as it gets. That's a meeting in Fort Lauderdale. And so we have like I have a 7-day-a-week schedule now, but that's not a meeting schedule. That's meetings that I'm inflecting into my meeting schedule. And my meeting schedule, no matter what, unless, of course, there's an event, is Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday morning. That's my meeting schedule. Then, of course, I go to church on Sunday. That's my church schedule. And I plan everything else around that. I never wake up on Sunday morning and say, what am I going to do? And maybe if I don't do it, I'm going to go to church. No, that's not how it works in my life. I know exactly what time I'm going to church, and everything else fits around church. On Wednesday nights, I know everything else that's going to fit around our Wednesday night meeting. And on Monday nights, I know everything else is going to fit. There was a person that came into town yesterday, a very, very dear friend of ours. They came in from Texas. I might not even see them. They came in. They wanted to see me. But I have a meeting to go to on Monday nights. Now, that might seem very rigid. And I know I'm supposed to be talking about 7, 8, 9, and 10. But I see so many new people in here tonight. So I have been prompted just to say to you, it does sound rigid. But let me explain to you this. I spend 16 hours a week in meetings. And 16 hours, the same 16 hours, I don't want you to think it's 32 hours, but 16 hours in meetings and in church and Bible studies. 16 hours, that sounds like a lot, but I get to have like 130 hours to do anything I want because of those 16 hours. So I have people tell me that they are too busy to go to meetings, they're too busy to go to Bible studies, they're too busy to go to church, they're too busy to go to temple, whatever your faith is, you're too busy. I want to tell you that that's not true. Because God will allow you to make your plate bigger. No one is too busy to get right with God. No one is too busy to have a meeting schedule. No one's too busy to do service. Your plate will get bigger. I have a sponsee in here that meets with people during the night. He actually meets with people during the night. People call him from jails and institutions. They call him. He meets with them at night. His plate has gotten bigger for service. God will give you the strength that you need to serve. So if anybody's bored in Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to tell you, you're sober, but you're really not getting the whole joy of life. Because the joy of life is being able to serve and do more service and have meetings and go to do different things, and you're going to just be on fire. You guys started a new meeting on Monday night, like you have nothing else going on. You have a business, you have a career, you have children, you have things. You have this meeting that you started from that was like 8 people, and now look at it, and now you decide you want to start another meeting. You know why? Because the joy of the Lord is our strength. What does that mean? We get rocketed when we do stuff like that. It's not like we're thinking, oh, I got to start another meeting, or oh, I got to get to this. We can't wait to get to the next thing. And how does that happen? Because in the seventh step, when we ask God to remove those defects of character of us, which is self-centeredness, which is selfishness, which is, I want to do what I want to do, which is sloth, which means laziness, those three main character defects that keep us bound to ourselves, when we ask God to remove those from us, and he does, guess what happens? You have energy. If the defect of character that's mainly driving you is self-centeredness, and your main character defect is sloth, and you have another one that is selfishness, and God removes that, guess what you have? You have a lot of extra time. Yeah. You have a lot of extra time. You're like, wow, I'm not thinking about me. I'm thinking about you. How can I serve you? I guess I'll start another meeting. And you'll be going to meetings that aren't rocketed, that aren't real meetings, that are meetings that are just hanging on meetings. I'm sure you guys are in halfway houses and treatment center. You get taken to meetings that are just like hanging on meetings, which means that people are sharing like, hi, my name is Stu. I'm an alcoholic. And then they go on to share about nothing that's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, nothing that means anything. It means something to them. They should share it for a couple seconds, but they don't. They share it for like 20 minutes because they're missing the train. There was a gentleman a couple weeks ago that came up here from Miami with a bike. He put it on a train. He has cancer. He took his bike. He stuck it on a train. He came up so that he could get his medallion presented by you guys so that he can show how grateful he was to Alcoholics Anonymous. And he came up here to do that because that's what's exciting for us. My parents are, in the next couple months, my mom's going to turn, can I say it? My mom, because you look amazing. So if you look terrible, of course, you'd be like, oh no, don't tell anybody. But my mom's going to be 70 next month. Yeah. The month after that, my dad is going to be, can I say it? Is going to be 80. My wife, I can't say that, she'll be upset, but she used to be a professional dancer. She was in the Columbia National Ballet. She loves dance. Her favorite show in the entire world is So You Think You Can Get Got Dance or Dance Something. And tonight, she went to our church. And one of the instructors from So You Think You Can Dance was teaching the class she was in. And so she watched this person on TV, and now he was teaching the dance class. And she went to a show last Tuesday, which was called Flash Dance on Broadway. And those people were the ones teaching the class with this So Think You Can Dance person. So she left there tonight after that, and she wanted to come here to hear her husband that she's heard 40,000 times. And my parents have another meeting that they go to in town that the people need them, but they're here to support their son. We travel as a family. My sister is in New York. She's also in the program. She listens to these things on tape because of Rachel putting them on rocketed.org and all these great things. My sister listens, and she shares it with her sponsees, and we have a family that's in recovery. That only happens by having God remove these defects of character, because the guy that used to talk out loud and all that kind of stuff, that was full of ego and full of self and full of self-righteousness and my way of the highway, my parents love me, but they wouldn't travel to hear me. I guarantee you. My wife loves me, but she wouldn't be giving up her night with our son to come over to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting when she's not in AA. But because God is doing a great work in us and making a change, we want to travel together as a family. Is that amazing? Is that incredible? That's incredible. And you know, because if Robbie wasn't working, you'd be here today. Robbie would be here, and he's going to listen to the tape, so it's almost like he's here with you, your son. And God is a God of restoration. He restores families. And if it's impossible for your family to be restored, whether maybe one of your parents are passed, or one of them's gone, or there's a divorce situation, or your parents and you just don't speak, and it's irreparable, and it's never going to happen. You think it's not happening right now, but you think it can never happen. I want to tell you that's not true. But if you're just not speaking to them, guess what God's going to do? The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous said that God will give you the fellowship that you crave. Like, my closest friends are here tonight. My closest friends are here. God gave me the fellowship that I crave. I craved to be loved for who I was. Not the persona. Not the fake Steve. And I had a lot of fake Steves. I had this whole story that I made up that my brother was a professional football player. Some of you guys know that story. And I had jerseys and clippings of him and all this kind of stuff, because I had the same last name as the guy that was playing in the NFL. And I walked around like that. My brother was in the NFL. I had another story that I was a black belt and I was studying with the masters in Okinawa. Those are just two of the stories. You laugh, but that's just two of just like the top 50 stories. Not that guy. That guy, I hope, is dead and buried. That's the guy that told me one night that it would be good to smoke stuff that's made out of a bathtub. You know, that guy. Or made in a bathtub from a guy named Joe or Jose. Try this. Okay, that sounds like a good idea. I hope that guy is dead. But this new guy that gets created through giving these character defects to the only one that could take it, which is God. You're not going to remember a lot of stuff. One of my grand sponsors, John, is completely sleeping tonight. So I know a lot of you guys are not going to hear everything. However, I want you to hear this. If you're in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and you hear someone say, and you know we've heard it many times, I'm working on my character defects. I'm working on patience. I'm working on anger. I'm working on lust. I'm working on sloth. I want to tell you something. They're going to be working and working and working. You'll come back 10 years later. You'll have already gotten your master's degree. You're going to be sitting with people in counseling centers. You're going to be helping countless men. And you're going to see that guy. Still, he's going to say, I'm working on my character defects. And he's still going to be working. He's got a full-time job on his character defects. Step 7 and 6 say nothing about you doing any work at all. It says about you being humble enough to realize you're never going to change you. Only he can change you. Once you get that, it's all him and not us. And you're off the hook. And then you're going to be going to meetings going, you know what, I'm working the 6th and 7th step and I'm asking God to remove my sloth. And then all of a sudden you're going to be showing up on meetings on time and they're going to be, well, it's working. I'm asking God to remove my lust. Well, I haven't cheated or looked at anything I'm not supposed to. Well, I guess it's working. I'm asking God to remove my greed and my envy. That's my bicycle outside. Isn't it nice? I guess it's working. I think that's all I'm going to say on 6 and 7 because I really covered a lot of it last week. Don't listen to the big book in this one area. Don't just glance over it. 15 years later, Bill W. realized, and over the years, as he started to see his friends go out and the people in the program go out and relapse, the people that were recovered, where it says were 100 people that have recovered, some of those people that recovered, they relapsed. I want to let you know that. So everybody in here that's talking about being recovered and everything, and it works. Believe me, I understand it works. You old timers, you say you're recovered, it works. I'm not asking you not to. I just want to let you know that some of the people that said they were recovered, they drank again. And then they realized over those years that 6 and 7 is not just a little footnote. It's actually almost the entire program. That when we say to God, my creator, I'm now willing that you have all of me. It's monumental. First, that you believe in a creator that could do that for you. And second, that you're willing that he has all of you. The proof will be in that you'll be ready to make your amends. You'll be ready to go to your sponsor and say, let's open up that 4th and 5th step that I never wanted to think about again. Show me where I need to make amends. You'll go to your sponsor, your mentor, your priest, your minister, your rabbi. You'll go back over your 5th step and you'll see the people you need to make amends to. And you'll become willing to make amends to them all. All. Does that mean you're going to rush out of the house and make amends to everybody? No. But you're going to become willing to make amends to them all, or you're going to pray to become willing. That's how you'll know you're in the program. Brothers and sisters, there's a lot of people that are in AA that are just not in AA. I told you I had 2 gym memberships for years. I was a member of the Diplomat, Health Club, and Spa. I was a member of the LA Fitness. And I was so heavy, I was wearing jeans. A Mason followed me around Walgreens taking pictures of me with an Insta camera while I was trying to get a 4X shirt. And I didn't go to any of the gyms, but I was a member of both. There's a lot of people in AA that are members of AA, but they're not really in AA. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous, being in AA, not around AA, will change your life. It's not just about not drinking. Not drinking is great. It's awesome. I highly recommend not drinking. But if you stop right there, as I've said many, many times, and you're going to hear it from Russell, that's like going to a buffet and stopping at the crouton and the salad area, when on the other end is lobster and filet mignon and all the incredible food, everything that you love, everything that I love, is on the other end of the bar, and you just go up to you with your little plate and your fork and your knife, and you go up and you say, you know what, I'm just willing to stay sober, and you take your crouton, and you put it on your plate, and you go back and you eat your crouton like this. I'm so willing to just stay sober. And you got other guys and gals around you, and they're eating steak, and they're eating shrimp, and they're eating mussels. Like, woo! And everything's going. They're having a life beyond their wildest dreams, and you're wondering why you can't have a life beyond your wildest dreams, because you're willing to stay with just being sober. Just being sober is the first part of the rocket ship. It's getting in the seat. It's awesome. You have to. That's your admission to get in the rocket ship. But having a relationship with God is the fuel that sends you into the fourth dimension. And if you're not excited, like this gentleman that came up tonight to receive his medallion, talk about excitement. Talk about gratitude. Talk about humility. If you're not like that, don't worry. Just ask God to remove those defects. And if you don't know which ones they are, just ask your friends. They'll tell you. And if you don't have friends, where's Timmy? Where's Timmy Stack? If you don't have friends that are willing to tell you about yourself, if your friends tell you you're perfect the way you are, you need to get some other friends. Because no one's perfect the way they are. We all have stuff to work on. We all have growth to do. If you were perfect, you would have already ascended. So if you're still here, there's more work to do. Your marching orders have not been completed. Get yourself some friends to tell you about. Today in the book of Proverbs, it says only a fool doesn't accept correction from his friends. Another translation says an idiot. Who wants to be an idiot? I want to accept correction. I want to hear what you have to say. I want to know what you're... Now, am I going to take every single thing? No, but if six people tell me I have a tail, I better start taking a look to see if I have a tail. Step 9, go and make those amends. Don't carry the burden any longer. Go see those people, but first see your sponsor first. I have this one sponsee in Boston. His name is Danny T. I'm not going to say his last name because I don't want to break his anonymity on this specific thing, but he's the cutest. He's got a great looking face. He looks like Ralph Macchio from the Karate Kid. He's just great. And I look at his amends list, and it's all girls. Every one of them. You know, Susie Cream Cheese, Valerie Harper. He's got all like 25 different girls. I go, Danny, what is this? He goes, this is my amends list. I go, this is not amends list. This is the dating game. This is not. If you see your list is all your past relationships, you got to bring it to someone with clearer eyes. Because nobody needs you showing up. They finally got you out of their lives. They finally have lifted the restraining order, and they don't need you showing up telling them how great you're doing. Take it easy. Let's do the big ones. Let's do the financial ones. You know, we never want to go see the person we owe $50,000. We want to see Susie Cream Cheese and Johnny Applecake. No. Slow down. See your sponsor first. This is not Match.com. This is your amends list. Let's do it right. Because once you get that stuff off your chest, once you're able to walk down the street and not have to duck people or not take phone calls or check your voicemail first, or if you see the creditors calling and you don't want to take that call, once you're able to get over that and make amends to where you can. Now, I know that these are tough financial times. I'm not saying that everyone is able to meet all their creditors right now, but you could at least make the amends where you can and or become willing to make those amends. And that was a big thing for my sponsor because there was a couple of people in there that I said I would never make those amends to. And then he said to me, well, that's not the step. You need to be at least willing to make amends to those people. And so I started praying for the willingness. My wife and I work in a mall. And unfortunately, during my relapse, I had worked there for 7 years and I was sober. And it's a close-knit mall. There's a booth on top of a booth on top of a booth. And when I relapsed, I became like a grandiose. I told you I would stay up for nights and nights on end. So one of the guys in this mall that we work in, he has a similar business to mine. So I had this great idea that I would go into the mall the next day after not sleeping for 3 or 4 days. And I would go and speak to this other business owner that had a business like mine and explain to him that it was in his best interest to join up with me. Because I was going to take over all the businesses in the mall that were like our business. And I was, of course, going to take over his business. Then he would be out of work and his family would be upset and it would be terrible. And I went in to disrupt, to harm me in his place, and he threw me out and I called him names and all that kind of stuff. When I got sober, I worked in the same mall. And I had to see that guy. And also I had taken things from other people's booths at the end of the night because I knew that they really didn't mind, because they knew me for so long and I would eventually pay them back. I had to go. Those were immediate amends. Those were amends immediate. Those are not like 2 years down the road amends. I did the other sign people and the other people, I did those amends immediately. I saw them. I said, I want to apologize for my behavior. I want to let you know that I'm a recovering alcoholic. And when I did those things, I was in relapse and I was drinking and I apologize. And if there's anything that I can do to make amends to you financially or otherwise, please let me know. Another person I had physically hit in the mall. I mean, there's no other way to say it. I had physically hit the person. And I think there's a better word for it, but right now, for lack of a better word, I'm going to say hit. And for people that are listening, it means I hit them. And as soon as I saw that person, I couldn't be going to the mall sober and not say to the person, I'm sorry, even though I wasn't ready and I was only a couple weeks sober. The first moment I saw him, I said, hey, can I speak to you? It wasn't like he was like, oh, yeah, come on over. I can't wait to see you. But he did see me, and I told him I was sorry. And let me tell you something. He called me a jerk. He called me a jerk. And you know what? He was right. And I said, you know what? You're right. He said, you acted like a jerk. And I said, you know what? You're right. And I'm sorry. And I promise not to do that again. And I, to my recollection, that's as good as it went. I know I didn't hit him. And I know I left there and I felt better. And I saw him in weeks to come and years to come. And things got better. Step 10. Continue to take personal inventory. And when we were wrong, promptly admit it. This is where I'm going to really spend a couple weeks on this. We're imperfect people. God knows what we are. He created us. We have been failing since the very beginning. Whether you believe the very beginning, like I believe, that starts with Adam and Eve, or you believe that we came out of the primordial ooze, we have been failing since the very beginning. As far as I can see, and I'm around my family, and for me, I'm like a family affront. I'm in love with my family. I'm crazy about my parents. I think they can do no wrong. I'm crazy about them, and I just love being around them. It's something amazing to always want to be around your parents and your wife and my sister. But they make mistakes, I have to tell you. As perfect as I would like to tell you, and I make mistakes. And I say things that are stupid, and they say things sometimes that are hurtful. And they're my family of origin. So what does that mean? They say things that bring up stuff of my childhood. Now, they don't mean it, but they do say things that bring up stuff from my past. And when they bring up stuff from my past, although in their eyes I had the perfect childhood, and probably I did, but in my eyes I see things differently, and I see things that I didn't have the perfect childhood. They might say something that rips open a scab of a family of origin. Anybody understand what I mean by family of origin? For four of you? Okay, that's good. Family of origin means stuff that your parents and your sisters and brothers said to you when you were younger, that when you hear it when you're older, it still makes it feel like you're 8 and you're 9. And you want to take your bottle and whack your parents with it. Or you want to take your bottle and you want to hit your sister with it. And that's family of origin stuff. That's very hard to grow up from. You guys know what I'm talking about. It's very hard to grow up. It's very hard to get off that stuff. And guess what? You're going to make mistakes when it comes to family of origin and your close personal relationships, the people you're in relationship with. You're going to make mistakes. And guess what happens when you make mistakes? We have this great step, step 10. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we are wrong, promptly admit it. We don't have to wait months. We don't have to do another fourth step on it. We don't have to go seek counselors on it. We don't have to call up a rabbi or minister on it. We just need to go make amends. You know what? I'm sorry. I was a jerk. I was acted like that with my mother a couple weeks ago. You know what? I was a jerk. I'm sorry. I do it with my wife all the time. I have to make amends. Making amends is not showing signs of weakness. It's showing signs of strength. When you feel comfortable enough in your own skin to say, I was wrong, please forgive me. Now, that doesn't mean you should continue to go over and over and over in the same offense. You should try not to do it. But if you continue to do it, guess what we have? We backtrack, and where do we go? Right back to step 7 and 6, and we ask God to remove it. If you're continually making the same offense, and you continually have to say, I'm sorry for it, and I apologize, we just have to backtrack a little bit. That's what's magical about the steps, brothers and sisters. Not that you write it down. Writing it down is just the exercise. Doing it is what's magical. And all of these steps come from this ancient textbook that I'm sure you know that I believe in. That's 7,000 years old. And it all comes from making amends, doing right with our brothers, loving one another, putting others first, apologizing when wrong, and not taking care of our own selves, but taking care of everyone that's around us. Once you realize that that's what we're doing here, that step one is the only one that talks about alcohol, and everything else talks about a relationship with God. And if you're not feeling that great relationship with God, it just means that there's more work to do. I want to leave you with a word that alcoholics really hate. I mean, really hate. I mean, there's words that alcoholics hate, like no. That's one of the top five words. Alcoholics hate no. No. I mean, you want to get an alcoholic, an addict, just crazy. Just say no just to see how they act. Can I borrow your bike? No. Oh. You want to see how spiritual one of your brothers and sisters in the halfway house is, or one of your friends in the meeting, and they say, can you just try it. Just give them a spiritual MRI. And when they freak out, say, I was doing that for your benefit. I wanted you to see where you're at. One of the words, of course, we hate is no. But the other word we hate is obedience. Oh, yeah. Yeah. What's one of our chief characteristics? Defiance. I mean, we love defiance. But when we hear the word obedience, you want to clear out an AA room? You know when everyone always brings up gratitude when they ask for a topic in the beginning? You want to become the least important, the least popular person in that room? When they ask for a topic, you say obedience. And you watch the whole room go, oh. But I want to leave you with this, Chris Burnham. I want to leave you with this. God loves obedience. Now, what obedience is for you, you define. I'm not going to say what it is. Everyone has to define it. But God loves obedience. And he loves integrity. And he loves honesty. And he loves follow through. And he loves sincerity. And all those principles that you've been hearing about, as they say, talk of practicing these principles in all our affairs, and everyone has different principles that they believe are the principles behind the steps. And some of them are the principles behind the steps. But there's so many principles behind the steps. I want to leave you with this. Do some research next week. I want you to look up the word obedience. Not obedience like our parents told us. Not obedience like the principal told us. Obedience because when we are obedient to God, he blesses us abundantly. And then the joy of the Lord will be your strength. God bless you guys.